It is only when they go wrong that machines remind you how powerful they are. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., coming at you, as per usual, from the home of Florida Man, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And we are here with another great guest as we continue the summer tech series on your podcast for IT business support. And this is the podcast where we share products, stories, and tips, all in an effort to help you run your business better, smarter, and faster. Although tonight, we are going to be talking about things to run inside the house, home automation, cryptocurrency, all that stuff that No Marketing Marv knows nothing about. We are going to talk about it. So our good friend Jim Tollison will be coming up in just a couple of minutes. I do want to say thank you. There were a lot of purchases this past week in the Amazon store, some of it related to Prime Day. I do want to say thank you for that. Folks, if you are interested in supporting this show and helping me to bring on other good guests and things, head over to podnutspro.com. You can select the donate button and support me either by the Amazon store, PayPal, or sign up for a subscription on Patreon. You can also find past shows, both video and audio there, and go back and find some episodes that you missed and subscribe to any of the podcatchers if you want to listen to us on the go. That, again, is podnutspro.com. And I thank you all very much for listening, downloading, and subscribing to the show. All right. We have a very active group tonight, it looks like here. I want to say thank you for those of you that are joining us live. We are here every Wednesday at 8 p.m. and we stream on Facebook and YouTube. And then, of course, the audio is published a little bit later. But thank you all for tuning in. Let us get right to it. So the man that I mentioned earlier, Jim Tollison, he is a fellow podcaster, has his own show called The Home Gadget Geeks. He also does a whole bunch of other stuff that we'll talk about later. Jim, welcome to the show. How are you?
Marv, great to be here. Thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this all week.
No, don't get your hopes that high. Okay. Kind of like that shirt you have that says get hip.
Yeah, this was from our high school internship program at Gallup. So for a lot of years, I ran a Gallup over here, Gallup Education Task Force is the Git, although we changed it to the I, so we'd get Git, you know, like get the repository, get it, right? And then HIP was high school internship program. So I spent about 5 years doing high school internship for technology at Gallup. So super fun.
Okay. So I do want to make a quick note. I've seen in the chat, and folks, I'm not going to edit this out, but I see that some people are saying that they cannot hear us on the Facebook. Yeah, but we can be heard on the YouTube. So if you want to switch over to that and catch that if you're having trouble with audio, thank you guys for mentioning that real quick. But don't know what's going on there. I, of course, have no stock in Facebook, so I can't help in any way. But so, Jim, while we're letting people swap over to the YouTube, why don't you go ahead and tell us, you mentioned Gallup, tell us about your day job and then tell us about the podcast.
Yeah. So the day job is a podcaster for Gallup. That's a full-time role since COVID. I did part-time recruiting, part-time podcasting. I've been podcasting at Gallup for about 8 years. So we kind of use that as a opportunity to kind of communicate with our customers. I thought 8 years ago, I've been podcasting since, I guess 2010, 2009, something like that. And I have my own tech show called Home Gadget Geeks, which thank you, Marv, for being on Home Gadget Geeks a couple of weeks ago. Always great to have you on. We'll have you back on here as we get through the summer. But yeah, I've been podcasting at Gallup for about 8 years, and now that's COVID kind of pushed me. We wanted to create a ton of content for our customers, so that kind of pushed me into a full-time role, and I'm not doing as much recruiting. Mentioned Home Gadget Geeks, but kind of my one of my favorite podcasts is Saturday Mornings. You join us for this, 9:30 Eastern. I spend time on AskThePodcastCoach.com. And if you want to come out and join us and learn some things about podcasting, and Dave Jackson's just one of my favorite guys in the whole world. We do that every Saturday
morning. Yep. That is a show I had listened to off and on over the years as I got into podcasting. So I got into the game a little late. I started listening to podcasts around 2013 and 14, started guesting on some shows around 2015. And in 2016, took this show over, actually brought it back from the dead. It was one of those, it had kind of pod faded, mainly because the talent before me only wanted to be the talent and needed somebody to actually host. So that's how I got into this.
Good. Sometimes they run out of steam. Good for you for picking it up, and great show. Thanks for inviting me to the summer, kind of the summer tech series. How cool is this? I was looking at those faces going through, and I thought, man, I don't belong in this. I don't belong in this group.
Well, so there you are.
Marv, thanks for having me out.
Well, here's the thing. So a lot of times this show, we go off, you know, chasing rabbits and squirrels and down holes and stuff. And some of them have to do with items that I'm just not geeky enough to talk about. I mean, I used to get ribbed a lot because I didn't watch the Star Wars. I did watch Star Trek, and I knew about Star Wars, so we had a bunch of stuff like that. Anytime we talked about cutting the cord or home automation, I mean, none of that stuff. I don't have anything automated at the house. I don't have either of the girls. I don't have any of those. I don't have smart plugs. I don't have, I mean, the best thing that I have is I got a little plug-in lamp for the Christmas tree. That we can turn it on and off with the clicker. Yeah. So
no, that works. By the way, I have one of those too. My lights down here. I have a little clicker. This is okay. Like, this doesn't mean you've given up on home automation. You know, I can turn the lights off and turn them back on with the switch. Super handy, and for what I need it for, it works great. So don't beat yourself up too much. There's actually more problems associated with home automation. You know, I've got something broken right now, and it's been broken for a couple of weeks, and I know I just need to dig in and fix it, but I just don't want to, you know? So I'm like, this is the tyranny of home automation sometimes. It's like,
yeah,
when it goes wrong, it goes terribly wrong.
See, I don't need a check engine light for the house. That's right. What I'm saying. Right.
Yes, no, I understand. Understand.
All right. So Jim, let's do a couple of things here. Now, you are not in the state of Florida. You are from, in Omaha?
Well, I grew up in California. So I was a Silicon Valley kid. My dad was an IBMer. So I grew up around technology in the Silicon Valley. And then spent a little time in Germany when I was in the military in the middle 80s. And then came back to the U.S., got married, and we moved to Nebraska. And on purpose. Well, the wagon wheel broke. You know, we just decided to stay. So, we've been here about 30 years and really like it here. You know, big football rivalries, or at least it used to be big football rivalries between Nebraska and Florida schools in the 90s or early 2000s. Not so much anymore because Nebraska's not very good. But
and neither is Florida State.
Well, it's okay. Those were the years and have enjoyed Nebraska. Yes, I do like the weather here. So that's one of the weird things people ask me, like, but what about the weather? And I'm like, oh, I love the weather.
So speaking of weather, so right now, 8:10 p.m. Eastern, 79 degrees with a real feel of 83, and just partly cloudy today. How is it out
there? Yeah, well, as I pull up my radar, which is one of my favorite weather apps to have, it runs on Windows really, really well, and it's got a good 89 degrees here. Actually,
what?
So it's warmer here than it is there. 89 feels like 90, and we got thunderstorms coming across the plains. So I imagine I'll see, a quarter to a half inch of rain tonight, and probably in the late hours. The storms tend to fire up middle of the state in the evenings. They make their way across, and we see kind of late night thunderstorms here about this time of year. So all is good here in Nebraska. We're at the very northern edge of Tornado Alley. So we do see some of those. Where I live in Bellevue. We have some hills, so you don't really have, we don't have to worry about it too much. We haven't seen it here.
And of course, here in Florida, Hurricane Alley.
Yeah.
We are in the midst of hurricane season. We've already had three named storms this year.
Yeah.
And it should be a very interesting year. And especially since they will no longer use the Greek alphabet for names.
So you mean post, when they get through the alphabet to Z, then they were doing Greek names. But we went well into the Greek alphabet last year.
I think.
And so are they going to start over with names again?
They've got a secondary set of auxiliary names that they're going to use, which I don't know. It doesn't really matter because the problem is nobody remembers the names unless they're huge.
Yeah. Sandy, Wilma, Katrina. Right. Those kinds of names. Yeah.
And Hurricane Andrew, my first.
Yeah.
Actually, I shouldn't say that. Hurricane David in 1979 was my first experience. Yeah, but Hurricane David's the one I actually was here and rode out without evacuating. Yeah. So, and I actually meant to say I got through those storms after my dad was also in Air Force. I was an Air Force brat, and I was stationed in Germany.
Whereabouts? Do you remember?
Tempelhof.
Okay. All right. Yep. Yep. He was Air Force, active duty.
Berlin, Germany. Yeah, in Berlin.
Yeah. Yeah. It whole different world over there now, Marv. I went back 6 years ago with my mom. She wanted to see where I'd lived. Of course, East meets West in Germany. And it's just a different, beautiful though. And I really enjoyed my time over there.
Okay. So I want to do one other thing. So I mentioned a thank you to the folks that were shopping on the Amazon store. And what I want to do, since we're talking weather, this was one of the things that was purchased, which was quite interesting. And I don't know if the person that purchased it is watching or listening to the show, but if you are, can you please write in and tell us? So if you're watching live or if you're watching during playback, I have on the screen something called the Ambient Weather WS2902C Wi-Fi Smart Weather Station. Again, not sure this is something that I would put at the house, but apparently this, and for $170.
Yeah, it's kind of right in that space, Marv. I go back and forth almost weekly on, do I get my own weather station? Because they've gotten really good. They've gotten really smart. This one in particular that we're looking at has a, you know, a rain gauge that clears itself out. It's got a, you know, screen that you put inside the house that you would track things on. It tracks all kinds of data as far as wind and sun and clouds and all that other great stuff. I would love to have one. I don't, by the way. I'd love to have one in my yard. But the weather apps are just so good now.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, do I really need to be a weather guy? And I'm the weather nerd on Twitter. Like, that's kind of the every day I tweet the weather. Oh, it's an automatic. But I tweet the weather and then it says, how's your weather? Hashtag weather nerd or something like that. And it's an automated thing. I love the weather. Like I could talk, we talk about it on Home Gadget Geeks at the beginning of the show. I'd love to have one of these, but I just, I'm having a hard time justifying it. Like, do I read, you know, do I really need to know how much it rained in my back porch?
Yeah, I don't know. So, you know, when I first got started down here doing this early on, but years ago, when hurricanes would approach, I would become the tech version of Brian Norcross. And for those of you that don't know, Brian Norcross got famous during Hurricane Andrew as the newscaster that basically, you know, warned all of South Florida to be prepared. And he convinced his radio station to stay on the air during Hurricane Andrew. And they took calls. Now, Hurricane Andrew is one of those quick moving storms. So it actually came through South Florida in less than a day, pretty much overnight. So they stayed on the radio all night long, taking calls from people who were like, hey, our roof just blew off. What do we do? So it got to the point where before every hurricane, I had this checklist that I would send out to clients. And we would do updates every time the hurricane center gave an update. I would give an update to the clients, letting them know, hey, you should probably start packing up now and shutting down your offices and getting home and stuff like that. I don't know if I'd go this far, but it would be interesting to have something like this.
Yeah, it's just nice to collect a little bit of local data. You mm-hmm. know, that's, I'm kind of a data guy. That's kind of my background. And so I'm enticed by it. I have never bought one. I probably won't be, just like I said, the weather apps are so good right now. And there's other folks that are doing it as well. So if you bought one, great. I'm jealous. I'd love to have one, but I don't know if I'll ever get one. Maybe I find one on clearance at Menards or something like that.
Yeah. Wait till it goes on sale. Mm-hmm. So what I will do, so for those of you that are watching, I'm going to put a link in the chat so that if you would like to go and take a look at this or maybe purchase something similar, use the link in the chat and help support the show by doing so. So that was, let's see, that was the YouTube link. Here's the Facebook link. And I don't know if anybody's still on Facebook, but if you can't hear me, it looks like a couple people there. So good. All right. So, Jim, you have seen the show. So this is the part of the show where we go in the news. All right, folks, if you have not heard by now, it is pretty much official. Windows 11 is coming. Refreshing the 35-year-old operating system can result in additional revenue growth for the world's second most valuable public company behind Apple. So when you look at some of the changes that are coming, of course, they're talking about a design change. And by design change, we're saying they're incorporating a new Windows icon with four equally sized squares. Woo. However, there have also been some tests out there that have shown that Windows 11 is decidedly faster than the latest version of Windows 10. So the new version delivered better results than Windows 10 in a variety of comparisons on a Samsung PC running an Intel Lakefield chip, according to a report from Hot Hardware.
I know I'm not supposed to interrupt, but I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
They're also going to have a revamped store. And, of course, everybody is waiting to see how much they push their subscription model, whether they call it Windows as a service or they do a stronger M365 push, bundling 365, Windows 10, and EMS. So we shall see how that goes.
I think it's going to be interesting. I think that they release this tomorrow. So yeah, the 24th, you might want to listen.
All righty. All right. So, folks, in Florida Man news, the only thing that matters right now is that you need to get ready for more outlandish crimes on the television channel Oxygen. They are bringing back the Florida Man series, and they will start on Saturday, July 10th, and go through Sunday, July 11th. And the four episodes have been announced, entitled Alligator God, Death in Texas, Hurricane Homicides, and Nice Guys Finish Last. So head over to whatever your streaming system is. Make sure you have the Oxygen channel, and you will get to see the Oxygen series entitled Florida Man Murders. And the best one is going to probably be the first one, entitled Alligator God. Here is the premise. Deep in the Florida Everglades, detectives find a human head, but no body. As they attempt to identify the victim, a Florida man comes forward with an unbelievable story. And that is going to do it for In the News.
Marv, have you seen an alligator? Like, certainly, do you see them often?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, we would do some recruiting at the University of Florida. And they have little sections with signs that say, don't
feed the alligators.
don't go in this area. And being in Nebraska, you know, it was just the first year or two we went there. It was like, really? And they're like, yeah, you don't want to go back in those.
Yeah. I mean, we see them all the time. So we're not far from the, what they call Alligator Alley. It's basically I-75 that goes across the bottom of the state. So anytime I head over to the West Coast, we're always looking out the side to see what we can see. There's also a couple of alligator swap rides where we go and see them, and you can, you know, hopefully get one up close. They have alligator wrestling. But have I seen one in person in the wild?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't think it's that impressive, just to be honest with you. I'm just like, oh, okay, that's cool. You know, it's kind of like seeing your neighbor's dog. You know, he's kind of
well,
like, okay,
pretty well. Much at this point now, because they are all over the place.
Yeah, I bet they are. I bet they are. So, hey, on that Windows 11 news, I don't think, like, I think most people are going to be disappointed with what's coming. Like, it really just centers things. You know, the icons move to the center. The start menu changes a little bit. I mean, you kind of joke towards it, like the new icon is, you know, square. It kind of is that way. I mean, I know they're continuing to do things to kind of try to make Windows more efficient, but that's such a big, bulky, heavy operating system. I just don't know how much you could do with that. So certainly there's going to be a lot of enthusiasts watching for this Windows 11 launch. And in the, like I mentioned, tomorrow, there's a big press conference. I don't think we're going to see commercial versions of it till probably the fall. So, you know, we'll see. There's some leak. There's a leaked build, and there's some other things that are going on with it. But I just don't. If you're an enthusiast, certainly if you're a sysadmin and you support the Windows environment in the organization that you work with, I would definitely be trying to get my hands on a leaked build to put in a VM or something like that, just to get some ideas. The leaked version actually works pretty well. Like it looks fairly decent, but yep,
we have a comment in the chat. John, one of our good friends and listeners, says that he's got it and is using it on a laptop, and says it works good so far.
It's not that much different than Windows 10. That's why it works well, because it's really, I don't want to call it lipstick on a pig, but I mean it's really just some UI changes. The infrastructure underneath has not, from what we kind of seen so far, not changed a lot. So it should work really well on a laptop or in a VM, because it's not that different than Windows 10. So it'll be the summer of talk on this thing. Lots of speculation. I imagine it'll roll out around school time for on new equipment, and then anybody wants to upgrade to it will be able to.
Right. Well, for those that want to watch, CNBC will be covering the event, which starts at 11 a.m. Eastern. And so you can tune in to CNBC and see what they say.
I see what they're doing there.
You see it? Oh, tricky, tricky, tricky. All right. So, Jim, let's go ahead and get into the meat of the show, which basically home automation, geek stuff. What things do you like to chat about on your show? So most of the topics on my show have to deal with IT business support. So things that we can do as IT providers, computer repair shops, MSPs, to support our customers. So we talk a lot about, you know, enterprise type software, remote management type stuff. Sometimes we'll talk, you know, apps and tools that we love, but you like to talk about fun stuff.
Well, sort of. Like, you know, fun is in the eye of the beholder. It just kind of depends upon what kind of torture you want to put yourself through. The home automation space is still pretty fragmented. So we have a lot of companies doing a lot of things. Not a lot of things work together. There's kind of two hubs in the space, Hubitat and then Home Assistant, that have really kind of come together. You know, Samsung made a run at this with their smart home stuff, or I should know the name of this, but it's escaping me. It'll come in here in just a second. And but it's kind of failed. And to be honest, there isn't, in the home space, nobody's really won. Like, there's some things, you know, you look at companies like Philips Hue for lights, or you look at companies like Ring, and I actually have a Ring right above me here on the video. I actually have a Ring solar panel that I bought on Woot for $20.
They really?
Were experiencing them. Yeah, it was like, they're normally $50. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna be putting a Ring, and I'm a Ring fan. I have a Ring on the door, Ring in the garage, over the garage door.
Well, that seems to be the one product that is certainly has staying power, I should say.
It does. Well, and it's owned by Amazon, so that helps. Wyze is another one of those. Wyze Cams is another one. We just spent a little time talking about that on Home Gadget Geeks last week. That's another one where it's, you know, inexpensive and kind of DIY. And a lot of guys and gals have kind of gravitated towards, they kind of just work, you know. But the Marv, the space, in my opinion, is still too hard for the average guy. You know, if you think about, so say you decide you're going to do all your lights with Philips Hue. Well, you're going to have a hub. And if that hub goes wrong for any reason, and I've already had one go wrong, you're resetting up all your lights again, which is not easy. Like it's not the average guy or gal. It's going to struggle with it a little bit. Or, okay, so you can go Wi-Fi lighting. And then you think, well, then they're all individual IoT devices. And do I have to worry about the security of them? And are they going to create an attack sector or attack point for DDoS? You know, some of those kinds of things. In the space, there's a lot of Chinese companies that are putting these things out for nothing. And then you kind of go, do I really want to buy cheap Chinese IoT devices at this point in time? So I wish I could bring you like really good news on the home automation space, but it's still, I think my opinion is, it's still a nightmare out there. It's still difficult to put things together. It's still difficult to install stuff. The Ring, even though you just said they seem to be the clear leader, I had to buy a Ring Chime device to tie the Wi-Fi signals together at my house to make it work kind of deal. And now I'm thinking of putting a Ring camera on the shed, and I'm like, which is why I bought the solar panel for it, so I wouldn't have to run power out there. And I'm thinking, is it going to reach? Do I need a Wi-Fi extender? Do I need to buy another Ring Chime to make this thing work, right? So I'd love to say like, oh yeah, home automation is here, but I still think it's a really geeky exercise. I think it's still really us figuring things out, and I'm not sure there's any clear winners. Go to Home Depot or Lowe's or Menards. Menards is in our area here in Nebraska, kind of a Midwest company. Go to your local big box store and go to their home automation space. It's a mess. It's just a mess. Like it just, things, it's confusing. So, you know.
So you mentioned this hub that you had to buy in it. So each thing that you buy, whether it's lighting or cameras or whatever, so they all have to have their own hub.
No, one hub for all the devices on Hue.
Okay.
So these are Hue lightings. Philips Hue is who does it. You need one hub for all the lighting, but then I had version one. And of course, anything new I bought with version one didn't work with version one. I had to buy version two. And so I had to upgrade my hub.
Oh.
You know, you're just like, these hubs are not cheap. You know, you're like, and Hue is the lighting leader in this. They've got some great, you know, they've got under the counter lights, they have regular lighting, they've got string lighting, they got all the LED stuff you'd expect. Really great. But like a strand, like a 20-foot strand of, you know, maybe what I'd put outside under in my deck to do like an under the deck or under the rail lighting, it's like $90. Mm. And you're like, oh, $90 for lights? Like I could hang Christmas lights for like $3 that I bought it, you know, on sale after Christmas. And so it's just a space. I think it's still shaking out, right? Mm. It's still figuring itself out.
So when you get the hubs, and I'm assuming for, you know, every section of things that you want to do, you have to connect to your Wi-Fi.
In some cases, yeah, the hub, you need a hub. Like in Philips Hue, you need a hub. Some will just directly connect right to your hub to your Wi-Fi.
So you don't need internet.
No, you would go on an app. Okay, so this is even better. So you'd plug the screw the light into the socket, turn it on. Then you got to go to the app on your phone and connect your phone. It'll broadcast. It's kind of SSID.
Okay.
And then on your phone, you connect to the light. And then on your phone, you connect the light to your Wi-Fi router. And then you can start managing it, right? So what if you don't know your password or you don't have enough strong enough signal in your house for that to connect, right? So it's still pretty complicated, you know, to get in there and get it set up.
All right. So then all of the things that we see on Amazon where they talk about the universal plugins, you know, you plug this in and control everything from here.
Yes.
That's not really true.
Well, okay, so TP-Link is the leader in plugs.
Okay, right.
All right. Again, another company, right? So with another app on your phone. Marv, I have like five, maybe six home automation apps. So many that I have my own folder. It's called Home Automation. It's where all the home automation apps live, right? So TP-Link is the leader on that, and they make smart plugs. And yeah, same kind of thing. So you plug it in and push a button. Then you got to go on your phone, connect to it. Then once you've connected to it, you got to go through a setup. By the way, you're going in and out of the app while you're doing this because you're starting the app and then it says, hey, go to your Wi-Fi and now connect to the device. Connect the device to the Wi-Fi. Okay, then we got that done. Now go back to the app and start setting it up. Name it, some of those other kinds of things. Again, not impossible, but just a lot of steps that you got to kind of go through. And so I'm controlling it on my phone. And the promises of this, let me just bring in another nightmare on this thing. So now a lot of these devices are, you know, Echo enabled or a Google Home enabled, or in some cases, even Siri. And you could set up all these routines and stuff in those individual control apps that are there, or you can set up in the apps that come with it. So when something goes wrong, like, so I set this up, there's no way I remember where, what I used, you know, I put a light bulb in and then 3 months later, I'm like, okay, what app is that in? And did I set up any automations using the Amazon devices? You almost need to create like a Visio chart, like as you're installing. I guess this would be my one recommendation for folks. If you're installing a lot of home automation devices, you might want to create a spreadsheet like you would at work, right, Marv? Like you've got, when you're supporting a customer and they've got a complex setup, you got some kind of documentation on where things sit and how do I log in and what's the IP address? May not be a bad idea if you're going to start on home automation to document anything you put in the house. So you know where it's at, what it's doing, what did you set it up on? What's controlling the automation? You know, because it could be in the app. It could be If This Then That. It could be Zapier. Like there could just be a whole bunch of different things you used to get it done. So you might want to, I guess my advice would be if you're going to start home automation, make sure you're keeping track of everything.
Okay. So let me ask this. Have you done anything really wacky, like connecting your fridge or your washing machine or anything like that?
Yeah, no, I have not. Our washing machine is smart. It's not that smart. And my fridge is 15 years old and I'm waiting for it to die. I tell you what I would love. And they have these. Samsung makes smart ranges. And I do a lot of things. Like in the morning, I perk my own coffee. And I set it for the same times all the time. So I have a 8 minute and 30 second brew time or boil time to get that coffee rolling in the percolator on the stovetop. And then I have a 5 minute brew, right, where it just perks through 5 minutes. Well, on the stove, I could set up a routine to just do that for me. I wouldn't have to, it would bring the temperature up to high for 8.5 minutes, and then it would bring it back to low for 5 minutes and then shut itself off. I do the same timings every single morning. And so if I had a smart range, that's how I would set it up. So it would do those kinds of things for me. Here's the drawback on smart devices on things like ranges and fridges and that stuff. I don't know about you. But how long have you had your fridge? Like, Marv, you've probably got a fridge. It's probably not, you probably just didn't buy it yesterday, right?
Well, so our fridge was with the home when we bought it. This is year number 8. So we are going to be looking for a fridge. We have other complications because we have to have one of those counter depth fridges. It's not a regular fridge.
Gotcha.
Yep. And of course, it's a little wider and stuff. But I'm not buying a smart fridge.
Well, and you shouldn't, because the average life expectancy of a fridge is 15 years, you know? And so there's no smart device in the world that has been supported for any more than maybe 3 to 5 years, right? Tom in the chat room says, you know, he bought this Samsung smart range. Loves it. Yeah, Tom, I totally agree. Love to talk to you 5 years from now to see if Samsung is still supporting the app, right? Now, don't get me wrong. I kind of sound like an old curmudgeon here. Like, get off my lawn, Marv. Get off my lawn. You know, I'm all in on this. Like, I am in on, you know, I think I have 7 Amazon devices in my house. I have 2 Google Home or Nest. I think they call them Nest Minis now, right behind me on there. My treadmill has some smarts to it. We just bought a Treadly 2, and it's got some kind of smarts and apps and stuff that comes with it, right? I'm all in on it. I just want to warn people. I think what we deal with on Home Gadget Geeks, and as I talk to guys who are trying to do this, it's still messy. You know, this is not plug and play. Marv, you don't have much. You're actually, I think in some ways you're smart.
Well, let me tell you the reason. I don't want more things tracking me in my home.
Sure.
I don't want to have to worry about more security because, as you mentioned earlier, are they attack points that people can come in, you know, where, let's put it this way. So we did get a new garage door closer.
Mm-hmm.
That is Wi-Fi enabled.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't turn it on because I don't want somebody coming by and opening my garage.
Yeah. Would you buy
the right app?
Would you buy a door lock that's Wi-Fi enabled? Like,
no.
You know, August makes those.
But all Schlage those things are coming out, whether it's Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, you know, what do they call it? The
near field.
Near field. When you walk up to it, it senses who you are and opens automatically.
Yeah. Well, my car does that. I just bought a new 2021 Legacy, Outback Legacy. No, Subaru Legacy. And I walk up to the car and because I've got the fob, it unlocks, right? You know, because I have the fob in my backpack. Not on me. I'm not pushing a button. It just unlocks, right? And then, you know, your house, you know, I'm kind of thinking, I mean, yeah, it'd be super convenient to be able to lock my door on the plane when I forgot to unlock it. Or, I mean, when I forgot to lock it when I was leaving, that would be super convenient. Or, Marv, maybe you're traveling again and you forget, you get 2 hours away and you're like, oh, the garage door is still open. Like, how convenient would it be to go to an app and just shut your garage door? Right.
Well, what should be the ideal is the garage door realizes, hey, I've been open too long. Let me shut myself.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And that's today. It can do that. Hey, if it's been open for a certain period of time, you can set a routine to say, close that thing. So the promises are all there. It just, what happens when they don't work? You know, I can now remote start my car via Wi-Fi through an app that's on my phone, right? That's how I'm remote starting my car. But there have been times, whatever, I'm in between Wi-Fi, you know, in the building at work, I'm in between Wi-Fi receivers, and it just dies, you know, and you're like, oh, okay, so maybe we're not all the way there yet.
Well, Comcast will solve that issue soon, and who's the company that's coming up with that sidewalk?
Oh, well, Amazon is doing
it. Amazon, yeah. I mean, we're going to have Wi-Fi everywhere by one of those two companies, so you'll have Wi-Fi. Why, wherever you need it.
I actually think Starlink is going to, you know, Elon and his Starlink is going to solve this before the other ones do, right? To have, you know, he's going to have a billion satellites that are all, you know, you're just going to, the coverage is going to be incredible.
Right.
And from what I'm hearing from some of the early folks that are in on the beta on this thing is that it works really well. So we may not even, it may not come from our own devices, which is a little sketchy, right? Do I really want my now the data that's coming through, the sidewalk data that's coming through, that's helping people do things? The Amazon says it's minuscule. It's minor. Like you don't even notice it. Well, yeah, okay. It's a fair point. But you know, do we really want to you know, especially in rural areas where there isn't additional, you know, it's not like farmers are installing, you know, Echo devices on every corner, right? So I think Starlink is going to be a big player in this space as we think about kind of Wi-Fi everywhere.
Right. So I want to go back. Kyle, who was a previous guest here in the Summer Tech Series, had mentioned that Z-Wave, Zigbee are the most common. And I looked it up here real quick. One app for whole home control. Are you familiar with Z-Wave?
You know, I am. And he mentions Home Assistant, which... In Home Assistant, there's some really good integrations with Z-Wave and Zigbee-like devices. But Home Assistant's another one of those. Now, okay, this speaks really well to your audience, Marv, because you speak to a lot of sysadmins, guys that are spending a lot of time. So they're installing, you know, Home Assistant installs as a VM or as a Docker device, right? Your audience gets that, but the average person doesn't. Like nobody else knows how to install that stuff for Home Assistant. And then even some Home Assistant setup routines are kind of Linux like, you know, and you're kind of like, okay, this makes sense to me, but my wife isn't doing this. My kids are not installing these things, you know, to make this work. So it's gotten a lot better than it used to be, especially in the Z-Wave Zigbee space. But we still have a long way to go.
Interesting. So you mentioned Docker, which I was introduced to Docker not too long ago. I started using Synology NASes as some of my backup appliance for my smaller customers. And of course, one of the first things that somebody asked me was, have you used Docker yet? I'm like, I have no idea what Docker is, but I've looked at it and it looks like it would be one of those things. So part of me is thinking, okay, some of these techs who love Synology put those NASes in their house and they can add all those apps. And if you're going to run, you know, Z-Wave or Home Assistant or all that stuff inside of Docker in your Synology, that's not your average Joe.
No, the average guy isn't doing, you know, and my site's theaverageguy.tv because I, early on, 12 years ago when I started the site, I realized, you know, the average guy was screwed when it came to technology. Like, it's gotten easier in some areas, but home automation is still a really difficult chore. Your audience probably would handle it better than most because they understand this idea of setting up a server, having an instance, protecting it, securing it, all those things, right? Zero trust, that idea in this, right? Your audience gets all that, but your parents don't. Like, they're not setting up a Synology box,
no, right,
to do this home automation.
No, as a matter of fact, so we bought Blink cameras.
Yeah.
For my mom.
Yep.
Who is older.
Yeah. Let's hope so.
And she actually texted me a week or so ago asking me if she can, you know, what did she say? Something about, you know, will they connect to such and such? And I said, no, you have to connect it to your Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And of course, she's like, what? And I'm like, oh, I guess I'll be making a trip soon.
It keeps you talking to your parents, right? It's one of those things. There are, Marv, I don't want to paint a totally bleak picture. You know, if we went with Ring, just say you wanted cameras,
mm-hmm,
and you installed Ring and you are using the Ring app, it's pretty simple. Like, that homogeneous environment where it's just Ring, you're not trying to integrate it with other things. That is doable. And I think with a lot of these devices, if you're doing, you know, if you're living in that space, it's pretty easy. If you keep things, or, you know, if you keep things kind of in their apps, where I think it gets complicated is in the integration space of, okay, so now when my Ring camera sees me come in the driveway, I want it to turn my lights on in the garage and bring the air conditioning down, you know, because I've had it higher during the day because I wasn't there. Although this was a great example before COVID, you know, now that we're all home, it's not a great example, but it's that idea, right? And then, so it starts lowering or it senses me leaving work. It knows it takes me 15 minutes to get home. So it 10 minutes till it starts bringing the temperature down so that,
or it could be a signal from your car on its route home that it gets within a certain range. And it's like, oh, well, Jim must be on his way home. Let me turn on the lights. Let me turn down the air. Let's make sure the cats are fed.
Right on. I mean, I think there's a lot of good things. There's a lot of good things to that. It's just as we integrate them together, it gets infinitely more complicated.
Right.
And I think we're making some progress. I mean, I really do. I think we're still a little ways away from it, but we're making progress where the average person can handle some of these things. We got to work better getting some universal API standards across the board where, you know, it's working for, but they're not incented to work together. Like, you know, why does Ring want other things to work with it? Like, they want you in their ecosystem.
Right. So if you're going to buy stuff, buy it from us.
Right. No, right on.
So let me ask you this. What is, let's say, the craziest thing, or the most convoluted, or your worst bugaboo that you've actually set up in your house that has the great story to it?
Yeah, the dumbest thing. Let's just say this. The dumbest home automation.
I was trying not to say that.
Are you okay with that? I'm okay with it.
I'm good with it.
The dumbest device is I bought an egg, and I forget what they called it.
Timer?
Yeah, no, it was, so, you know, you buy a dozen eggs at the store, and then you take these dozen eggs and you'd put it in this, And it would actually track, like, so when you put the egg in, there was a little sensor in there, and it would record the date of when you put that in so that it could tell you when the when your eggs were about to expire in there. And then you I'm telling you. And you put it in the fridge, and it had a little temperature sensor on there, and you had an app that you could go to. As you'd pull the eggs off, it could tell you which ones. There was a little light on it that would tell you what's the oldest egg, so you use that one first. And that thing was a disaster. Like, it never worked. It was in the fridge, so the batteries never really held up very well. It never really delivered on what it promised. But yeah, that was the dumbest home automation.
Wow.
I'd ever bought. And I think I bought it for like $20. So I didn't spend a lot on it. And it was on clearance for a reason, because it was pretty dumb.
Okay. So, my goodness. So here's the next question. That sounds like something that the wife saw and said, hey, why don't you get that for me?
Oh, no, it was all my idea. That one's not, she doesn't care. My wife does not care about this home automation stuff.
Wow.
She, for the most part, right? I mean, I've taught her how to turn the lights on and off, but when they break, then she just looks at me like, seriously, dude, I could just go over to the switch and turn that thing on. Right. So, she's not as into it, and she enjoys some of the things that we do with the entertainment center. You know, I have a Nvidia Shield and some of those things, but for the most part, Nvidia Shield, it's basically an Nvidia. It's all video card. Right. And it's a device that you can use to serve up. You'd plug it like a Roku device. Just think of like a really powerful Roku device.
Okay.
They're $150 to $200. Ugh. And it creates kind of a media center. You know, I kind of came out of a world, you know, 10 or 15 years ago where we were all Microsoft Home Server and Microsoft Media Center users. The NVIDIA Shield, based on Android, is one of those devices that allows me to, you can watch all the Hulu, Amazon Prime, YouTube Home, whatever they call it. And but that's kind of our main entertainment center. So I have a subscription that I use that records TV, and so she can watch recorded TV on there as well. So she does use that. She's good at it. It's a pretty good little device that we use a lot of. That's probably our most used. I don't know if I'd call it home I'd call it home automation more than I call it home entertainment, right? In what we do.
So is it, do you store like your own movies on there?
Yeah. Well, you could, if you wanted to. I got out of, I have an Xbox that we watch movies on. So I got out of the business of trying to store movies, because that was dumb in my opinion. Like, okay, one is I can buy a DVD way cheaper than all this technology that I need to store it. Two, I could just stream it. Like, you know, I don't really need, if I really wanted to watch it and I couldn't get it, I can just stream it for a couple bucks, right?
Right.
Or I can go down to Redbox and get it. If it's a newer thing, I just go down to Redbox and get it.
Right? Redbox. So, you know, wow. That tells our age, you and I. I know it's
They're still out there though. You can still
not here.
Oh, really? Are they gone?
I haven't seen one in ages.
Maybe I wonder if the COVID wiped them out. We still have a Redbox at our Baker's here in town. So
I would think the opposite, because for those of you that don't know what a Redbox is, it's basically a Blockbuster video kiosk where you would go to this vending machine like thing and get your movies on DVD.
Physical.
Out of the red box.
Yeah, and we still got a bunch of them here in Nebraska, and I get coupons for them all the time. It's something like 99 cents, and I can literally just drive by and pick up a video if that's what I want to do. Anyway, so there's lots of ways for me to consume movies. Here's where I have a 1 terabyte SSD that's attached to the NVIDIA Shield.
Okay.
That's for TV recording. So when I'm recording TV, then I can, that's where those TV recordings go. And so we do it that way rather than, and yeah, we could go to NBC.com or Peacock, I think is what it's called now, or CBS All Access, but we still find it convenient just to record over the air HD and watch some of those. And then she can go in and delete them. So we do this kind of combination of some over the air, some in the apps, like we're watching New Girl right now. She's watching New Girl. That's, I think, on Netflix. And so she's watching, or Hulu, one of the two, right? So she's watching. We get Hulu for free. We're Sprint customers now, T-Mobile. And so we get Hulu for free. So she's watching some Hulu stuff as well. So it's, Marv, it's all over the place. Like, it's all, like, stuff is everywhere. It's like, is that on Amazon Prime? Or is that on Netflix? Or is that on Hulu? You know, right?
Well, I tell you, one of the best apps that I put on my iPad is Yidio.
Oh, I've heard of that one.
Yeah, Yidio, Y-I-D-I-O.
I thought you were calling me an idiot there for a second.
And it is basically a show finder, whether it's TV or movies. Yeah, so Yidio, streaming guide for TV and movies. And if you want to know where something is playing or if it's available for free or for pay, you download this app and I'll get the... This isn't going to do it justice. I'll just put the link in here. But the app, you just do a search for whatever you want, whether you know the name of the show you want to find or the movie, or you want to browse. It'll give you the ability to browse new releases, or if you want to pick a genre, whether it's comedy or horror or action, it'll tell you what the most popular ones are. It gives you the TV schedule. So if you don't have a regular DVR box from your cable company and you're all streaming and you don't want to go through the guides on each of your streaming apps, you can go to Yidio and it will tell you what's on the TV and where. It'll tell you where free movies are. And if it's a pay movie, it'll tell you which service for which price. So if you wanted to see the latest, what's the latest Tom Cruise thing out, whatever, Mission Impossible.
Top Gun, I think, is
what. Top Gun. That's right. Top Gun did come out. Yep. It'll tell you which streaming service it's available on at which price, and you can just simply click it. And if you're on your iPad or your device and you have that, if it's on Hulu, it will send you to Hulu to watch it.
Yeah, there's so much out there. I mean, we think Netflix, Prime, Peacock, ESPN, Disney, HBO, Paramount, Apple TV, AT&T.
Because if the wife is listening, she will want me to get. I already know. So I thought I had them all.
Yeah.
But we didn't get Disney Plus. And apparently there's something coming on Disney. What is it? Sex and the City or something's coming on there that we're going to have to get that too.
Yeah, well, it's always and I use channels. That's the service that we use to kind of record our over the air. And then it's got some integrations in with all those services as well. So you could go to the channels format and get all those things as well. This idea of combining or like there's a bunch of services that are doing that.
I'm sorry. I just got the text from the wife.
Oh,
it's HBO Max is what we have to get.
There you go. So. Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of, HBO has become relevant again.
Yep.
HBO was a big deal, right? When we were.
Oh, it was huge.
Yeah. Teens and 20s. And then, a little kind of with cable just became a thing, but now is a big player right in the space. And I think that was because of Game of Thrones. But yeah, it's just there are tons of options when we think of the entertainment space of that you have in we all wanted to cut the cable until we cut the cable and went, oh my God, like this is hard to bring all these things together. Right?
Well, it's not just that it's hard. They got smart and started raising the prices. Yeah. So now it costs more to cut the cord than to stay on the cord.
Yeah. I mean, you're now spending $150 easy if you've got, 9 or 10 of these services at $10 each, right?
I wish it was $150.
Yeah. Well, we don't. I think I pay the $10 a month for channels. I think we have a Netflix account. Of course, Prime comes with Prime, but that's not free. I'm paying for that as part of my Prime service. Boy, that thing keeps secretly jumping up every single year.
Of course.
Too, right?
It does.
I think that thing started at $79 and I think it's $140 now or something like that.
Well, I think it's $140 if you add on. It's $119 base.
Okay.
But we're doing that. I do Hulu and I have to have Hulu Live here at the office. So that's $80.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, Marv. It's
and
just
what
ridiculous
else did we just
what
get?
We're doing. Yeah.
And CBS just got bought by somebody, Paramount.
Yeah, Paramount. So now that's going to be a new Paramount service. You know, it'd probably be Paramount Plus or something.
Yeah,
along those lines, right? So, yeah, it's hard to keep up. We're in a consolidation mode, right? We're going to go back to a single where you have one or maybe two or three services, and you just buy one of those for the 150, and then you're like, and you forgot you cut the cord at that price.
Yeah,
you know, way back in the day, you're like, you forget. Because it's been so long. Eventually, we've seen these things, right? They cycle through. So I think eventually they'll all consolidate back into
just a couple. So let me ask you a question about your OTA.
Yeah.
Did you go through a bunch of antennas before you decided on one that has kind of worked for you? And if so, which one?
Yeah, so I did. I had a friend give me a really good HD physical metal antenna, like one of the, you know, the kind
big boys.
Yeah, one of the big ones. And I didn't want to put it on my roof, so I put it in my attic. Okay. So it's up there. I have this big, I'm not using it at the moment, but I forgot I even had this up there. I have a big old, and I might have two up there, because we have two different here in the Omaha area. We have two different antenna farms that are serving up over the air. So one is on, you know, the northeast part of town, the other's on the southwest part of town. And you can't get one antenna, I thought, to do them all, right? So I had two antennas up there, and it was okay. But then I bought one of those flat, you know, they're just like, you know, it's just like a square. It's like a plastic square.
I got one of those.
Yeah, and you're like, how good can this thing be? It's tiny, and it's plastic. And I put that up there and attached to it, and it brought in everything. And I was like, are you kidding me? I got these two giant metal antennas in my attic, and a little plastic one hanging. I literally just have it with a zip tie hanging from the very top of the rafters up there. Mm. And I ran a wire up there, and it's doing great. So those, for me, those kind of flat antennas have just kind of worked out for the
Omaha. Okay. Yeah. All right. Cause I have one, but let's just say I can't use it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say why.
Yeah, no, everybody's got their own. You got to kind of, I think in this area with antennas, you got to figure out what works in your market if you're going to go over the air.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so it just varies. This isn't one of those where like this antenna works best for everybody. I think you got to test a few. This is where Amazon's great, is you can just buy them and return them. They don't care. I don't think Amazon's looking at returns anymore, by the way.
Oh, yes, they are.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
You think so? Okay.
Yes. So I've had two things. I don't return much.
Yeah.
And I buy a lot, but I did have to return a couple of things, and they don't just automatically approve it anymore.
Maybe things are changing over there. Yeah.
Well, I think they got smart because people were
putting bricks.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they still, if you have a good reason to return it, they'll take it back. Right.
Yeah.
And they do. And you can do it at the UPS store or Kohl's or some of those here in the US, right?
Yeah, they're still pretty easy with the returns. They just obviously want to validate that's it. What they've done is the one device that I had an issue with, they actually want to hook you up with the manufacturer to troubleshoot to make sure that if it's not working properly, why don't we, you know, get somebody to help you make sure before we send it back.
That's a good customer experience. I just bought my fridge was leaking, and I bought a new...
You bought a fridge on Amazon?
No. The ice maker connector was leaking, and I bought the wrong thing, and I just took it down to the UPS store, and they actually, on my phone, just beeped the QR code and then beeped in the two things I had brought in, and it's a done deal. It was a return, you know, it was only $10, so it's not a lot of money, but it was returned to me very, very quickly. So they're getting better at that. I think, though, in TVs, this is that area you want to try a few things out and see what works best in your
market. Yeah. All right. Well, Jim, we are moving right along here, and I want to try to get to one other topic at least before we run out of time.
Yeah.
You had mentioned Unraid to me.
Yeah.
So I wanted to chat about that. Tell me and the listeners, what is Unraid and why should we be paying attention to it?
Well, 12 years ago, I came from the Home Server show. Dave McCabe and friends, we used to do this show called Home Server, and that's all we talked about. And Unraid kind of came out of that. We were Microsoft Windows Home Server fans. I was a Windows Home Server MVP for about 5 years. And, you know, home storage, right? And for the longest time, we had a listener, Mike Howard, who just passed away just recently, but he was a big Unraid fan and said, Jim, it's just drop dead simple and it's super easy to use. And Unraid is really just a piece of software that allows you to run kind of server grade, home server grade services inside your house and put together any kind of hard drives that you have. So it's pretty good. It's got some things it can do with RAID and there's some great configurations with it, but you can kind of do a bunch of different stuff with it when it comes to maybe you have a bunch of miscellaneous drives that you're just trying to put together, right? To make this thing work. You can use, it works on almost anything, like hardware wise. It'll work on old computers. It'll work on new computers. You can build big Unraid farms or small ones. You can have as few as 3 drives. You can have as many as 300 drives. It's got an active community that is, continuing to work with the folks over there. We have them on our show from time to time. In fact, we're doing a show with them, not this Thursday, but next Thursday. They have an upgrade that we're going to come in and talk about. But it basically allows you to build some pretty great home storage if you wanted to do your movies or music or whatever. I've kind of moved everything to the cloud at this point, so I'm not doing that anymore. But it also has a development platform on top of it. We talked about Dockers earlier. You can run VM and Dockers on top of it if you want to do some advanced things on it. So this is one of those platforms where you can do, and I think most of your audience has probably heard about Unraid before.
Probably. But they probably have.
Yeah, they probably have. But it's a great opportunity to if you wanted to build a non-Windows server environment that had a lot of the capabilities to create SMB shares, to create VM, to do remote VMs, to be able to run Dockers. Unraid is, I think, one of the better platforms. Easy to set up. You can run it off a flash drive. You know, you literally can run it off a flash drive. So doesn't require a lot of hard drive space to get done. I have, my server has 4 gig of RAM. I could run it with 16 or 32. Some of the Dockers require a little bit more memory. So just a good little platform, Marvel, a good little platform to do some things at home that maybe some of your sysadmins are doing with Windows or Linux servers at work in big environments where you can kind of bring this one home and install it kind of behind the firewall. So to
speak. Okay. Now, is this its own OS or is it just simply... Oh, a way for you to put OSs on it.
No, it's its own OS.
Okay.
So it's a system. You can load it. Like I said, you can load it to a flash drive and run it on a computer. You can run it in Linux. It's got a bunch of distros. So kind of depending upon how you want to run it, you can.
So now is it something where you would build like a mega system tower with all your drives in it? Or can you run it off of a NAS?
You can run it on whatever you have.
Oh.
So there's, like I said, it can be built on a small little box. You could probably get a version running on a Raspberry Pi if you wanted to. Now, it depends what you want to do with it, right? It's got a cache drive that's available in it that you could, in other words, if say you got spinners for all your regular storage, but you wanted to get faster transfer rates, you could put an SSD cache drive in between the network and the spinners, where that data would come into the SSD drive and sit, or M2, that doesn't matter, and sit, and then it pulls it off once it's all there, and then it pulls it off the SSD drive behind the scenes, or M2, and puts it on the spinners for long term storage, and so it gives you faster transfer because you can get data onto an SSD faster than you can on a bunch of spinning drives, and so it gives you, you could do that if you wanted to. That's in there.
So kind of like Synology, where they have for their higher boxes, they'll have the M2 SSD cache.
Yeah, just like
that. You can do that. Interesting. Just
like it. And so instead of, like, if you think about all the things you can do on a Synology, you can do it on Unraid, except it's kind of DIY friendly. So you can do it in your own build it your own way. There's a development community that's out there, like with Synology, that's doing all kinds of things. So it just some guys and gals like to tinker, right? They like to build their own or take a bunch of equipment and kind of repurpose it. I can't build a Synology box with an old computer. Right. I can build an Unraid box with an old computer. And that's actually, I have an old Core i3 540. So that's first gen Core i3 from like maybe 10 years ago, 9 years ago, something like that. In Unraid, for the way I run it, doesn't necessarily need a Core i7 4770 or whatever. You can run it on some old gear.
So I saw, I'm looking at the website and I see network attached storage. So basically you could build a NAS with this and connect it to a Windows environment.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And the beauty of it, it's a NAS solution first. So it's really designed for storage. So you're going to set it up and give it some drives, right? And you want a cache drive. If you can get it, give it an M2 or an SSD cache drive. That run the OS off of the flash drive. You don't even need to, because it loads into memory. So once you just don't even need to mess with the OS. And then have you know, two, well, maybe three or more spinners that you're going to use as your rated, you know, you're going to have one in parity and then the other two for storage, and you can set up a bunch of them that way. And just kind of a great way, there's some things you need to do. And there's, by the way, there's tons of videos on YouTube about this. Your largest drive needs to be the parity drive.
Okay.
In what you're doing. But it's not hard to set up. I mean, I'm not that smart and I got it running, you know. So
all right.
pretty great little solution for somebody that wants to tinker around with older equipment or a variety of equipment, but doesn't want to buy a NAS.
All right. Well, I'll have to chat with you because I've just today got a quote from my distributor that we were submitting to HP for a deal registration, a Smart Array SAN, and the cost, $44,900.
Wow. Okay. Well, there you go.
So we are getting, let's see, this is a HP Smart Array, and we've got, let's see, two 1.9, 2.5-inch SAS drives, and then 21 1.8 terabyte hot swap 2.5 SAS.
Yeah, and you're buying some pretty good gear there. What is it going to run? What's it going to run?
This is just going to be, oh no, this one is, so we're putting together an RDS solution. I'm going to do Hyper-V servers up front. We're going to do three of them.
Yep.
And then this is going to be the SAN for the user profiles to sit behind.
Yeah. Yeah. You should look into it. Like it's a pretty good, Unraid is a pretty good OS to run behind the scenes. There's businesses that are running it. So, you know, it's your opinion of, is this thing ready for the enterprise or not?
Right.
I think the Unraid guys would say, heck yeah. Yeah. Heck yeah, it is. You might want to spend a little time with it.
I'll probably have to run it here first and see.
For sure. Well, but if you have a Synology, you're already really close to what Unraid does. You'll set this up. The interface is a little bit different, but you'll start thinking like, oh yeah, Synology does this. The service is here. Like, this is how you do it here. And it's got a gigantic developer community behind it. So just about everything you think you need is out there as well.
All right. So Unraid folks, if any of the listeners out there, if you have used Unraid, please chime in at some point, send me an email or send us a message here on the chat on YouTube or the Facebook and let us know. And if you've got any ideas to help me get started in setting up my first, that way I don't have to bug Jim.
Well,
Mark, on this
2 weeks from now, you need to join us on Home Gadget Geeks because we're having John from Unraid on.
Oh, he's
one of their senior engineers and I would call him chief evangelist. And so he's going to come on and talk about their 6.9 upgrade, and that just may be a good one to show up at. So not this Thursday, which would be the 25th, no, the 24th, but whatever, is it July? What's next?
It's Thursday? July 1st.
July 1st, theaverageguy.tv/live, just like you do for PodNuts. So theaverageguy.tv/live, it'll be 8 p.m. Central, an hour after you normally start. And if you want to come out and hear more about what's going on Unraid, you can come out on the show.
All right. So there you have it. We're just going to We're just going to slide right into that and start to end off the show here. TheAverageGuy.tv. News, reviews, product updates, and conversations.
Yeah, and more conversations than anything else.
All right. So there you have it, folks. Jim Tolleson, who not only runs the Home Gadget Geek podcast, but does a lot of other podcasts for the Gallup network there. And good friend of mine from Ask the Podcast Coach, Saturday mornings at, 10:30 Eastern. What time is it for you guys?
I think it's 9:30 Central.
9:30 Central for you.
9:30 Eastern, yeah.
That's why you drink so much coffee on the show.
It's super good. It's one of my favorite things to do. If you need something on a Saturday morning to put on behind, you know, just playing in the background, Dave Jackson's just one of my favorite guys in the whole world. And so I enjoy spending time with him. You can join us.
All right.
I think askthepodcastcoach.com/live. So that'll be for there as well.
That's it. All right. Well, Jim, thank you very much. For those of you that are watching live, please stay with us. As we end off the show, we will be doing a post show here and we'll continue some of the discussion we have had. For everyone else, be sure to join us again next week as we continue with the summer tech series, although we have a little bit of a twist. I had scheduled before we started the tech series, Alan Weinbarger, the founder, CEO, and chairman of the ASCII Group. Alan has previously published a book earlier this year called The Doctor's Inn, Treating America's Greatest Cybersecurity Threat. So I will have Alan on and we will chat about that. We will chat about ASCII and what he sees going forward in the MSP market. So be sure to join us. Same bat time, same bat channel. That is going to do it for this episode of Podnuts Pro, folks. Thank you very much for watching, listening, subscribing, all that good stuff. So we will see you back here next week. Enjoy yourselves, and until then, holla.